This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book, The Invisible American, The War Years Before and Beyond. Joining me from Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, is the author, Donald J. Crewin. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Oh, thank you very much, Jay.
Don, I looked over your book a little. It's a short read, I guess, and I don't mean to use the word short again, but your grandfather was petite. He was, 5'3", a blacksmith, and born, I think, in the 1915, or was that your dad that was born that far in history?
No, it was my father.
Your father, wow.
Yeah,
and your and you did this as a tribute to your dad. It's a 56-page read. I will say this about it. It's very easy to read, not just that it's simple, but it's done in a narrative style that's more like a novel, I would say. Now, your background is as an air traffic controller. How did you get the skills to communicate the way you did, and how did the stories develop?
Well, actually, I had to really cajole my father because he didn't want to really talk about his experiences during the war. But I finally got him to talk a bit about it, and I sort of put it in the back of my memory because I was pretty young back then.
Yes.
And when it comes to my writing style, I took a course of radio broadcasting in Confederation College. So that's mainly where I got my my English and writing composition done.
Your father, I'm sure, was, as you said, reluctant to tell his story. The other, if I may use the term, sad part of the story that struck me, although the book is not sad in itself, is the fact that your father passed away at a relatively young age, probably as a result of the difficulties of war. Would that be a good analysis of that?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I think. And the problem, though, that he had was he seemed to like war because in the book you'll see that he re-enlisted to go to Korea. So I guess he did like the excitement, but it sort of got to him.
Was he formally educated beyond being in the military?
No, I don't think so, because when he grew up in Fork River, and then his mother took him and his brother over to Winnipeg River, I never heard him mention any schooling at all. I think he got most of his education when he joined the military.
That may have been one reason he continued with it, I would think. Now, he grew up in Western Canada, and yet you have as a title, the title of the book, which again struck me, The Invisible American. Now, were you referring to North America in that or the United States of America?
Well, the thing is, the solution to that is to read the book, because right at the end of it, you'll understand why I titled it The Invisible American.
Well, that's an intriguing idea, certainly a cliffhanger, as they put it in in movie and in written terms. When you finished this book, who did you think would find this book appealing? I just will mention on a personal level, I felt it was well done and certainly an easy read, good to read. Who did you also feel would find this book attractive?
Well, I believe my book there would be appealing to those who like to read war stories, and also to those interested in military history. The Invisible American details some action taken by our Allied forces in order to achieve victory in World War II, and then the United Nations' determination to set up a multi-nation military force to protect the Republic of South Korea from the invading Communist North.
Interesting. Now, there also is another aspect of this. Your father, I believe, enlisted in 1938 when horses were a part of the military. Is that an accurate understanding of what your dad began his career in the military?
Yes, that's correct. The Lord Strathcona horse at the time was a cavalry unit. So when he joined up, he took horsemanship training, and the Lord Strathcona horse remained a cavalry for maybe one or 2 years, and then they were changed. Well, it was decided that horses were not too valuable during wartime, so they changed to a mechanized outfit. First it was motorcycles, and then gradually they changed again and became armored corps.
Interesting. Now, what did your dad, was he a motorcycle guy in the war or something else?
No, he was a tank commander.
Wow. That's an amazing bestowed benefit or honor that was placed on him. He obviously had some leadership skills. And you, in finishing this, first of all, Don, how long did it take to complete?
The book took about maybe almost a year, I think, because I had to go back and do some research just to get the dates correct. I didn't want to, you know, screw up on all the dates when he did certain activities. So I had to go and get the Army records and everything, and so it took about a year.
That part is also fascinating. I've had relatives who were in the military whose, I will use the word scrubbed, their records were scrubbed. They were not available when research was attempted to find out certain details. So that, again, is, I think, a miraculous fact that you were able to find the records and do that research. There must have been one thing that you wanted to have the reader take away from this. Now, your dad did pass away in his early 40s. What else did you want to underscore for the reader?
Well, I would like to say that writer-philosopher George Santana said, "Those who do not learn history are doomed to repeat it, lest we forget."
Right. And you also are, I think, concerned about veterans wanting to memorialize their efforts in wartime and also in peacetime. You also have talked about the liberation of other countries and how the illegally suppressed countries of war. And
that would be Holland and France.
Wow!
When the Nazis invaded there, Holland had a really tough time. A lot of people died of starvation, and the Nazis, they confiscated all the food supplies. So some of the Dutch, they had to live on eating tulip bulbs to survive.
I wasn't aware of that. I have friends who are living currently in the Netherlands, and I was not aware of that history. I know there's a lot of depth to our past that has been either skated over or ignored and is not being taught currently. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I'll tell you, in the case of Holland, every year they have a celebration for the Canadian forces that liberated them. And our veterans during that war were visiting them all the time. However, as they get older, we're getting less and less veterans able to go over there to celebrate with the Dutch.
Well, your father also had a brother, Michael. What was his story? Did that get told in this book, or is it just mentioned in passing?
No, I just mentioned, but I probably could have went in further. He ended up joining the Air Force, and he was in the military police and MP.
You have included a couple of amusing stories as well with the brothers. The Mama Bear story, I think, is one that comes to the surface. Share a little of that and maybe something else that you have highlighted in your book that will attract the reader.
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to remember it here. Okay, another couple of episodes here. The first one was Hal and Michael were young brothers, and they were returning from the Winnipeg River from fishing when they came across two small bear cubs. They knew immediately that they were in trouble because they couldn't see the mama bear. Suddenly they heard a growl behind them, and they took off running frantically and then climbing onto the roof of their log cabin. Their mother, Betty, was inside, and when she heard the commotion outside, she grabbed her broom and began swatting that bear on the head and the back.
Wow. I'm assuming that chased the bear off. I'm guessing everything went well from that point forward.
And then
another instance a little later in life, Lieutenant Hal. Travers, what is that referring to?
Here's a little episode there. Travers, yelled Lieutenant Hal, but it was too late. Suddenly, smoke spit out of the Panther's tank's big cannon. Then there was a sickening crunch of an anti-armor projectile as it penetrated through the Sherman's light armor. So that's another example.
There are plenty of personal stories and reflections in your book. I think, again, as a reader and observer of writing, I think you've done a phenomenal job on this. How would you describe this or introduce it to somebody if they're looking for something? Would you call it a light read, a super serious read, or one that's only intended for families or a family? I don't think it is restricted to that personally, but I wanted your view on that.
This book topic is similar to others as far as being a war story. But it is different because it follows just one soldier's experience from his early childhood to the very end of his short life. The story of the Invisible American takes place in Canada, England, Normandy, and Belgium during World War II and the South Korea in the 1950s. It ends with a stopover in Japan when Lieutenant Hal's final tour of duty.
Very well done. My congratulations to you, Don. Is this an idea, the writing, the authoring, the becoming an author, is this an idea that will transfer forward in the future? Are you planning a second book follow-up?
It's funny you should ask. Yeah, right now I'm on a second book.
Good.
And it's called Sparky in the Arctic. It's about my experience as a radio operator up in the north.
Incredible. Well, this, again, I will say this, readers, you will enjoy the read. It's not only entertaining, but it's informative and certainly well done. Don, you have a good style and one that I wish you well in the future on not only this, but the second or third or fourth or however many books you decide to write. The title of this one, The Invisible American, The Warriors Before and Beyond. My guest author, Donald J. Crewin. Crewin. Don, my listeners need to get a copy of this. How do they do that?
Well, right now, Indigo Chapters, even Archways, and Thrifty Books, I notice, are advertising it. Mostly they're advertising right now the e-book.
Yes.
But I have a hardcover coming out shortly. Right now, the ones that are available are just soft covers. But, it's like I say, they can get it from Archways or Indigo Chapters or Thrift Books or a few others.
And they can do a search under your name, Crewin, Donald J.
Yeah, Donald J. Crewin.
They should be able to locate it there. Maybe Amazon and Barnes & Noble, the other online booksellers, will have a copy of this, and they should make this a part of their library. I think they will find it entertaining, informative, and inspirational all at the same time. Don, thank you for joining me today and sharing your story.
Well, thanks a lot, Jay. I sure appreciate talking to you.
My pleasure. For Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Congratulations on getting your book published. The effort you put into your work is truly commendable. But what's next? What will happen to all the knowledge you have worked so hard to acquire to produce your book? Here at TogiNet Radio, we can provide you a platform to keep your knowledge working for you through the power of podcast. The subjects our podcasts cover are as varied as the grains of sand on a beach. From life coaching, to military resources, to business success, even to the paranormal. We have a place for everyone. To get started on your next step, call Scott at 903-787-5880 or email him at scott@toginetradio.com. That's S-C-O-T-T at TOGINETRADIO.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host.
Greetings for Author Talk. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book title is 55 Reflections of a Searching Skeptic, Scanning the Depths of Spirituality and Mental Health. And joining me from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, is the author, Rich Melcher. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Hey, thank you, Jay. Glad to be here.
Well, I've been scanning your book and looking at some of the topic material and find it to be a fascinating bit of material. You have almost 170 pages, not quite, but this book is unique in many respects. How would you describe your book? You have mentioned in your book that bipolar challenges have been part of your history. You also have been on a spiritual quest. Share what this book is about.
The book is really a potpourri of different topics that started with spiritual readings. About 5 years ago, I started writing for our bulletin for our church. And just little articles, a quarter of a page. And then they expanded my vision to a whole page on the cover of the book because I got so much good feedback. And what happened was I really found my voice. You know, it's like when you catch your flow or you get in your groove.
Right.
And that's what really inspired me to write this book is when I found my voice in writing about spiritual topics. Then I brought in other articles that are written, like on bipolar, 5 years earlier than that, and other things like on anger and about humility and reading struggles I've had. It's got some memoir, a lot of memoir, but it's got a lot of other articles that are just kind of like a bouquet, a bouquet of different ideas and textures and topics that's really been put together in a way that, what happened... Kind of funny. I forgot I was a poet.
Yes.
I mean, you know how you start writing spiritual things, you start writing all these. I forgot I was a poet, and I was going through my computer, and I realized I had this vast amount of poetry, and I started putting my poetry with the articles I'd written on spirituality, and it fit so well. I couldn't believe it. So I started cutting and pasting, and the poetry embellished the readings extremely well. And so, like one chapter on bipolar, I have 12 poems that bring out the real strength of the writing on bipolar that never would have happened if I hadn't put the prose and the poetry together.
You've explained some of the incidents, the personal incidences that have happened in your life that relate to bipolar, I'm assuming, from content. One was after you had joined the football squad at Mankato State University football squad, that your mom showed up for the game and she was on crutches and it just kind of skidded over the top of your understanding of what was going on.
Well, with bipolar mania, you're the last one to know that you've got a problem. It's all in denial. And my mom was on crutches. She wanted to see my first game, and she tripped. It's an 80-mile trip, and she was at home, and she tripped and hurt her ankle. And she wrapped that ankle up in ace bandages and got on the road and came to see me. And I didn't even recognize that she was on crutches because I was so manic and hyped up. And it was just a mess because she was totally shocked. And when she saw that, she said, this guy needs help. Mm. This was my first time when I was really manic for the really in trouble. And I was up, you know, it just came out of high school into college as my first college game. She saw that and said, this guy's got to get up to Minneapolis to get checked out. And when I got checked out, they put me on lithium, and the story goes on from there that I calmed down, and my life went on really well for 6 years until it fell apart again. I ended up in the hospital six times in 1986.
Wow.
And it was a real mess. But most of my bouts have been with mania, but then some of them have been with the deep depression and the struggles with that. But that's just a little bit of what my book is about. It's a lot of is it about these articles I wrote for the bulletin for my church, All Saints Catholic Church in Milwaukee. And I would say 50% of the book is spiritual. And then there's just two or three on bipolar that are longer because I'm telling my story. And then a lot of them are about, there's one about an ethics code that I spent 10 years writing, an ethics code, 75 versions that ethics code to start putting it together. So I put that in. It's called the ROCKS code. I love acronyms, so I created the ROCKS code: responsibility, respect, observation, cooperation, knowledge, safety, and service. And then that becomes, I brought that out into more deeper writings to create a real ethics code that anybody can follow. And I think really kids could really get into it because it really gives them a sense of who they can become in ethics. And we sure need ethics these days, don't we?
Absolutely.
How our government is working and what's going on there, you know?
Mm-hmm. I was reading an article this morning that traced back some rather unethical activities that were taking place in the United States government over the last 15, 20 years. And, you know, shocking when you do the research. Your book title, 55 Reflections of a Searching Skeptic. Now, the word skeptic gave me the impression that you were maybe not too impressed with spiritual things, but that's not the case. Your book definitely deals with it.
Oh, my gosh. It started out with my first article is called On the Sheep, and it's based on John 10:16, where Jesus says, I have other sheep in my flock.
Yes.
And I took that as saying that God is ever present and Jesus loves everybody. And he's inclusive, not exclusive, even though many times he is exclusive in some of his things, like John 3:16, saying kind of like, this is the only way, or John 14:6, you know, I am the way, the truth, like, no one comes to the Father except through me. And it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, Jesus, you're being really exclusive. But Jesus is very inclusive. So in many other places, like John 10:16, where he talks about this flock, being his flock, even though it's other people, out of the people he is usually dealing with. A skeptic is just kind of the beginning story of my articles and the poetry. It really doesn't reflect the whole book at all. It's a very positive book. I am skeptical because I try to find the truth in things, and you have to be skeptical to find the truth.
Yes.
You can't just take everything in, you know.
Absolutely. Well, in looking over your book and looking at the content, it is a very inspirational look at Scripture and our relationship. Mm-hmm. If we are people of if we are searchers or seekers, as many people, mm-hmm. many right. churches are called. And although you are a member of the Catholic Church, the book certainly mm-hmm. is not only reflective of that approach to worship. You talk about your choir being in the choir. I found that a little story interesting as well. You have joined the choir as a tenor and then became a bass singer, which is something I can relate to. Share a little of that what that significance is.
Well, they needed more basses. We only had two basses, and we had about 15 tenors. So my director said, Rich, come down here and be with the basses. You can't hit those high notes anyway. So those tenor notes, so I was screeching on the tenor notes. So she brought me down to a bass, And now he's got six basses. And the choir's a gospel choir in a Catholic church. It's a black Catholic church.
Hmm.
And I'm a white guy. A white guy in a black Catholic church. And I married a black woman and brought her from a white church into our black Catholic church.
Fascinating.
So she was in a white church at Marquette University. And now she's in our black Catholic church of All Saints Gospel Choir. She's in the choir, too. And so we sing gospel music in a Catholic church, which is very rare.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of visitors that just come to our church just to hear the gospel music.
Wow.
And, amazed that this is a Catholic mass with gospel music. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to be a part of. We travel to France. We've traveled to Rome. We've traveled to, let's see, what other countries? Uganda. So we've been around the world. Traveling and singing our gospel music, and it's been a beautiful thing.
Well, that sounds fascinating. Have you done recordings as well? I'm just curious whether that's possible.
We've got a ton of recordings. We record every Mass, and I think we've done professional recordings about three times.
Oh, exciting.
Starting with Holy Angels, which is where we started across town, and then they collapsed about 12 churches into two, and we're one of the two churches that they collapsed the 12 black Catholic churches into about 1993, which was really disturbing, but that's what they did in the Catholic Church because they were very poor parishes. And we're a pretty poor parish, too, but we've got this gospel choir that brings people in,
and
it's a wonderful thing.
That does sound exciting or interesting. I have a music background, so I would be curious to listen to some of that music. What's the name of the choir, if I may give them a plug?
It's All Saints Gospel Choir, Catholic Gospel Choir.
All right. Well, I'm going to look that up,
and
just in
just
case.
Putting those two words, Catholic and gospel, together is very rare, so people are very intrigued. We get a lot of youth coming from the high schools that are doing their orientation for their studies for not baptism, but the, what do you call affirmation, confirmation
services.
Confirmation,
yes.
Students coming and doing the public service, and they want to be a part of our church in that day, and they get to see our church. There's a big group of kids, 50 kids will come in on a bus and just really enjoy the clapping and the music and the energy of our choir in our church. It's just a beautiful thing. We love being in the choir and traveling and going all over the city and all over the country and all over the world.
Exciting. And when you began to write this, what was your goal in mind? What did you hope to achieve by completing this and sharing this with the public?
Well, you know, I found my voice.
Hmm.
I found my writing voice in the last 5 years writing those articles. And then after I wrote the articles and was putting them together in the book, that's when I found the poetry. I forgot I was a poet, and I started putting these poems together with the articles, and they fit so well that my voice just expanded and became poetry and prose together. And that's when I realized that this book could be an example for people of how to be a creative writer who has their own voice. So if people could read my book and look at it and say, man, this guy put some stuff together that he's got something going, and you know what? I could do this too. I could have my own authentic voice of my own through writing my own material. So it really was, it became an impetus for people to exemplify my book and not only get material about bipolar and about the gospel choir and about anger and about all these different topics, but to see that, hey, this guy did this. He's using his own story many times. I could write my story. I could write my own material. That became a real impetus for me to say, man, this book is a teaching tool for people to, if they want to, if they really want to, find their own voice.
Fabulous.
And that became really the impetus.
One of the poems that you shared in your book is titled The Whole, and I'm not sure whether you have that or have access to that, but I think it might be interesting or inspiring for you to share perhaps some of the content of your poetry. Is that something you can do?
The Whole is about the poor in spirit, and it's a poem that goes together with the poor in spirit, and it starts out talking about St. Francis in one of his pictures of his biography. He has a hole in his garment.
Mm.
And it just represents the poor in spirit. You know, he walked around with just just ragged clothes, but became this unbelievably Christian, like Christ, man who was amazingly wise and became a whole group of people still called Franciscans these days, from way back then when he started his ministry. And the whole is about the poverty of spirit.
Mm.
And it's talking about the whole in our garment being the poverty of spirit. And let me just read a little bit for you just real quick. I have been there, have you? In this hole of emotional distress, in this hole of psychological stress, in this hole of physical distress and duress. Pretty familiar for territory for many, intimately known by very many others. Yet there is a comfort and solace in being aware of the personal poverty of spirit, to be at peace in the midst of the lack, knowing that the light of Christ can shine through any darkness, at any time, at any place. So that's just a little bit of the poem, the whole. And I read this to one of my clients who was really suffering from stress and feeling guilty about things he had done in the past. And he just was mesmerized by this poem. And we read it again, and he I think it's his favorite poem in the book because it spoke to him so well. My book's a slow read. It's not a fast read. Because you have to chew it, you have to digest it. It's not let's read through this book and get some interesting topics. And no, it's poetry and prose that go so well together that the poetry brings out the reflection in a way that you never would have known the truth of the matter if the poetry hadn't gone together with the prose, and they work so well together that I think I've got 50 or 60 poems in this book. The book, the one on bipolar has 12 poems itself.
Wow.
And they just go really well together.
Well, it's beautifully done. You have about 55, well, actually 57 maybe different topics that you address in your book. And again, it could be maybe a devotional for people who want to maybe reflect on their spiritual journey. And they could jump around the book, if I may use that term. They could go from one.
Sure.
They don't have to read it in consecutive order because the topics are standalone. They do the reflection that you have at that moment and have shared with them. Mm-hmm. The title of the book, again, is 55 Reflections of a Searching Skeptic. Rich Melcher has been my guest. Sir, where do we get copies of your book?
You can get them on Amazon. You can get them on Barnes & Noble. And they come in many formats. They come in hardback, soft cover, and they come in Kindle form. Those are $3.99, so that might be one you might want to get and put it on your Kindle. And they're going to be 99 cents. They're $3.99 right now, but they're going to be 99 cents in about 3 or 4 weeks. So that might be something you want to look up. Just look up Rich Melcher or 55 Reflections. And
fabulous.
My website is 55 Reflections, and you can look up that, too, to look up more about my book.
Fantastic. And they can keep in touch with you through your website, I'm sure. There's probably a connection there.
55reflections.com, yeah.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And is there a book in the future? Are you thinking of still sharing your insight from time to time?
Yeah. I got an idea, and I started a book about the lost years of Jesus between the time he was lost in the temple and when he started his ministry.
Hmm.
There's nothing about it in the Bible between age 12 and age 30. And I'm writing a story about how it's a novel about how Jesus became who he became through developing his ministry. It's not just like it appeared out of nowhere. He had to practice these things. He had to get, you know, his parables down in his mind before he started hitting the Pharisees with him and stuff like that. So it's about his cousin and his uncle who helped him develop himself to who he was, along with the Holy Spirit, of course, who was in all of it. But it's a story of these lost years of Jesus and how he became the minister and the gospel, the prophet and the savior we know of as Jesus Christ as he became 30 years old. So it's about those lost years between age 12 and age 30.
Well, that would be a fascinating read as well. So, Rich, I have a feeling we may be talking again in the near future and sharing that insight as well. Title of this book, again, is 55 Reflections of a Searching Skeptic. Rich Melcher, M-E-L-C-H-E-R, is my guest author. Thank you, Rich, for sharing your story and sharing the insight into your journey of faith and also health. Thanks again.
Thanks, Jay. I really appreciate being on your show.
For Author House and Author Talk, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing. Join us again next week at noon Eastern.